Ravi Ramanan, on the 14th of August 2010 at 2:46 p.m., surrounded by family members and devotees, Ravi Ramanan was absorbed into his master, Bhagavan Sri Ramana. Ravi was the second son of the president of Sri Ramanashramam, Sri V.S. Ramanan, and his wife, Srimati Sushila. Since Ravi landed in America about 12 years ago, he was a source of inspiration and support to all devotees. Throughout his successful career, he often told us that whatever Bhagavan had given him belonged to Bhagavan's devotees. Even without his saying this, it was clearly demonstrated by his generous deeds, which were numerous. Although residing in the USA, Ravi continued to be dedicated, active player in the affairs of Sri Ramanashramam. He went to great lengths to obtain copies of photos taken of Bhagavan by Elliot Ilsophon, owned by the Time Warner and archived at the University of Texas in Austin. He was also successful in persuading the Henry Cartier Bresson Foundation to release Sri Ramana Maharishi's photos from their archive in France. He, along with his wife Ranjani, was the editor of Sharanagati, the ashram's online monthly newsletter. During the last few years, he guided web designers in shaping Sri Ramanashramam's website, sriramanmaharishi.org. In every aspect of the ashram, he took immense interest. His guidance in administrative matters was always decisive and correct, coming as they were from a pure, totally dedicated heart. His early demise is not only a tremendous loss to his immediate family, but to the ever-growing family of devotees of Sri Ramana Maharishi the world over. Ravi had always told his family that at the age of 45, he would wrap up his commitments in America and together with his family return to Trivannamalai. On the threshold of his 45th birthday, his master and Lord Sri Ramana took him directly to his eternal abode, bypassing whatever noble plans of serving his guru at Sri Ramanashramam Ravi had envisioned. It was about 2 years ago when Ravi's brain tumor was first detected. This was soon followed by major surgery and continued therapy. The existence of a tumor first became apparent on 23rd of September 2008 when he suffered a seizure and lost consciousness while exercising in the early morning. As he was losing consciousness, not knowing what was happening to him, he first thought of the uncertain fate of his wife and two daughters. But no sooner did that thought come than another overwhelming thought rushed in, formed in the following words of the second verse of Sri Ramana's Sri Arunachala Ashtakam, which means, "Who is this here?" When I sought within, I watched what survived in the disappearance of this here, that is, the self. Spontaneously focusing on the import of these words, he experienced a flood of pure awareness filling his entire being. That was the beginning of his final journey on earth, a journey he felt to be the direct grace of Bhagavan Ramana. Everyone who had heard of Ravi's illness during these last 2 years was naturally saddened by the news. But those who went to visit him, surprisingly, came back inspired and encouraged. On seeing him, we never felt any weakness of spirit, paucity of faith, or absence of complete surrender or devotion to Bhagavan. Ravi never allowed others to dwell on his illness or be inconvenienced because of it. As the months passed, he became spiritually transformed and indrawn, yet sensitive to the concern and feelings of all his friends and relatives. Knowing his departure was imminent, he gave instructions to his family on every detail regarding where they should live, the girl's education, and even the destination of his remains, which travelled within days to the foot of Arunachala. All those present on Ravi's last day tell of the overwhelming experience of peace that flooded his room. They said it was like a surging wave that washed up on the shore of his consciousness and overflowed into the heart of everyone present. And sometime after he had breathed his last, and that wave of peace and joy receded, they found themselves left behind, standing, while Ravi, totally surrendered, was swept away into that eternal ocean of pure awareness. On hearing of the seriousness of Ravi's condition, Swaminathan, Terry Sawyer, and Sitaraman from the San Francisco Satsang immediately flew Friday night to North Carolina. They reached Ravi's bedside just a few hours before his passing. Swaminathan and Terry sent the following report of that day. The final day, 14th of August 2010, Durham, North Carolina. I think it must be very rare for someone to receive a send-off like the one Ravi got today. Dennis had mentioned that he strongly felt Bhagavan's peace in the hospital room and that Ravi had Bhagavan's grace to the fullest. Well, it was clearly evident today. About 30 people were in that small room singing Ramana Sadguru when his breath became more and more shallow and finally stopped. His face appeared calm during and after. His body looked so healthy and even the hair so intact despite months of chemotherapy. But I could have easily believed he was just resting on a Saturday afternoon. The end came at 2:46 p.m. Many songs were sung during the day, including those from Arunachala Stuti Panchakam and Ramana Sannidhi Murai. After Ravi passed away, Sushila and Ram Mohan sang the entire Ramana Puranam from the Sannidhi Murai. Bhagavan's grace, his omnipresence, was very palpably present in the room. Even though this was a deeply personal time for all of Ravi's biological family, it seemed so amazing how each person present was somehow made to feel the reality that we are all children of Bhagavan and therefore brothers and sisters in one all-inclusive family. The welcome and warmth, the generosity extended to the members of the extended family was admirable. There were several devotees from the Washington, D.C., Connecticut area, from North Carolina, Atlanta, and the three of us from California, besides several relatives, all of whom I did not know. You know, there must have been 40-50 people who visited on that day. Following Bhagavan's example, Aruna, Sridhar, and Shekhar arranged for a sumptuous multi-course lunch for everyone. The entire family's dedication to Bhagavan's devotees was evident in the way each one came up and spoke to every devotee who visited during what rightfully ought to have been a few very personal hours filled with wrenching grief. This was especially true for Sundaram and Sushila, as the loss of a child is said to be the greatest grief of all. Bhagavan's presence seemed to swallow up and include the human emotions of sorrow and grief that could be seen on the faces of those present. It seemed that the tears, the shocks felt through the room when Ravi took a particularly deep and loud breath, and the many other deep emotions one could read on the faces, voices, and postures of those present were all so clearly also His grace. The dignity and gracious courtesy of all family members was so evident over and over again. At one point, the nurse came in to give Ravi a dose of morphine. She kindly explained to Sundaram what she was doing and why, and then asked him who Ravi was. Although one can only guess his feelings, Sundaram's face, when he said, "He is my son," showed clearly he was very proud to be the father of Ravi, and he seemed to be comforting the nurse, telling her all is well, while she was attempting to comfort him. The children were particularly impressive. Each showed composure and did not hesitate when asked to dip their finger in a small vessel of Ganga water and place it on the tongue of Ravi. It was as if Bhagavan himself was instructing his children in the task and guiding them on the proper way to perform the duty. Ranjini, Ravi's wife, immersed in the feelings that surely only a wife and mother can know, had up until then been seemingly completely inwardly focused. When she heard me say to someone from behind that I would rather just stay in the room than go take lunch, she turned and by look and gesture alone lovingly made it very clear to me that declining to share in the food was definitely not an option. I then gratefully took part in the heavenly prasad provided to all. When we arrived, and throughout the day, Ranjini looked as one who, as you might imagine, was carrying a heavy weight, albeit with great dignity, not complaining, but somewhat grim looking. Afterwards, when I was standing in the hall just outside Ravi's room, she came up to me and shared a few affectionate words of kindness. Ranjini's composure and her dignified bearing during the day really captured my heart. I was so moved that when I was expressing this to her at the time of taking leave, I instinctively bent down and touched her feet. I asked Anand, Ravi's elder brother, whether or not the family considered the possibility of taking Ravi to Arunachala during the last days. Apparently, Guru Rangan, Ravi's doctor, throughout the illness, had visited Arunachala recently and even broached the same subject. But Ravi was too ill to make the trip and had said, "Arunachala is everywhere," or at other times, pointing to his heart, "Arunachala is here." It reminded me of what Ranjini had told us about Ravi's comment on reaching the hospital for the last time earlier this week. I have had enough and now I just want to go home. Anand also mentioned an experience that he had had a few weeks back when, in deep sadness, he fell asleep one night, pondering Ravi's fate. During a dream, he distinctly heard a voice say, "We have lived through numerous births, some of them for 100 years, others for even 200. How does it matter if we die at 40 in just one of them?" He said that since that night, he felt that Ravi had Bhagavan's grace and that lessened his sorrow. Indeed, he was probably the most composed among all the family members in the final moments, holding up Ravi's chin and fondly stroking his hair. And just after the breathing stopped, Anand seemed to tower over the room, standing next to Sundaram and his brother Ganesan, with what may have even been a slight smile, his eyes beaming forth with great intensity, and it appeared happiness. Shortly after Ravi had passed on, Ranjini recounted the following. Ravi and Ranjini had gone to the Tirupati temple immediately after the marriage, when Ravi was 28 years old. Coming out of the temple, they prayed. Ranjini then asked Ravi what he had prayed for. Ravi responded, "To realize myself in this birth." That answer surprised her somewhat. What remarkable sincerity. Moreover, Ravi would apparently often tell his family that he wanted to stop working when he was 45 years old and go back to Sri Ramanashramam. This was not something that his daughters, born and raised in the United States, were very keen about, but Ravi insisted. Ranjini said, "I don't know how he came up with the number 45, but as things turned out, he has passed away just a few weeks shy of his 45th birthday. He has indeed gone to Bhagavan's eternal ashram." On our way back to California, Sitaraman told me a story that he had heard in Bangalore when Ravi was in Bangalore as managing director of GE India. His secretary applied for a loan from the company in order to finance the medical treatment of her sick uncle. The human resources department concluded that she did not qualify for the money according to company policy. When Ravi learned about this, he walked up to his secretary with a blank personal check of his own and asked her to fill out any amount that she wanted. What generosity! And he would always comment about how wealth, power, and position are all very transient. There is another story that demonstrates the spiritual approach Ravi took with him even to the workplace. Before Ravi joined his current employer, Blackstone Corporation, he interviewed with another company that was in an extremely competitive manufacturing business under intense cost pressure. When asked by the CEO of that company how he would prepare the company to survive and thrive, Ravi responded that as chief operations officer, he would work to transform the company from the inside, as a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. It struck me that these could have been Bhagavan's own words of advice for anyone, whether running a company or simply for one's self. Ravi's was a life lived to the fullest and with distinction in every way. He had an enormously successful professional career, yet he found time to be of so much service to Bhagavan's devotees by participating in the management of the ashram, overseeing the revamp of the ashram website, working hard and successfully to procure negatives of all the pictures of Bhagavan heretofore unavailable to the ashram archives from European and American photographers, and by being a great inspiration and support to all of Bhagavan's devotees who met him, whether in India, California, or Connecticut. His external life is something that each one of us who knew him, and certainly his family, can be very proud of, while the manner of his passing clearly indicates how much his inner self was a recipient of Bhagavan's grace. Ever since I heard about Ravi's sickness 2 years ago, but especially since yesterday morning, the following verse from Shankaracharya's Bhajagovindam has kept haunting me. The water drop on the tip of the lotus petal has an extremely uncertain existence. So also is this life ever unstable. Understand that consumed by disease and conceit and riddled with pangs is this whole world. So chant, seek Govinda. To watch a short video of Ravi's answer to "What does Pradakshina mean to me?" please use the link given in the article in the newsletter.